from Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public service professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Rebecca Abraham, Michael Lotus, Jacob Meister, and Kathy Salvi. Our program tonight, covered to our own base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And, of course, if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, it is beyondthebeltway.com. And, as always, we have a very busy, jam-packed 2 hours for you this evening. A little bit later, we're going to be talking about the Republican tax bill and the implications of that. John McCain, who you know is in serious health. He is going back to Arizona, but President Trump has said that he would be willing, Senator McCain would be willing to come back to Washington for a crucial vote if it is necessary. That'll be something else we'll discuss a little bit later on in the broadcast. The president also said today that he is not planning, there's no plan at all to get rid of Robert Mueller as the special counsel. So those are two big stories. We will delve into them a little bit later. But one of the things I want to talk with is the change in public attitude about the Mueller investigation into Russian involvement in our election in 2016. In recent days, there has been a revelation of communication between Peter Strzok, who was a senior FBI executive, and someone who had a relationship with him, a young lady who had a relationship with him. Lots of tweets and emails and communication going back and forth. They've been made public. They were made part of a congressional investigation, a hearing held earlier this week. And here is one of the exchanges. Rod Rosenstein, by the way, we'll get to the specifics of what was said in that. But let's go first to an exchange between Congressman Shabbat from Ohio. He's questioning Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General of the United States.
How, with a straight face, can you say that this group of Democrat partisans are unbiased and will give President Trump a fair shake?
We recognize we have employees with political opinions, and it's our responsibility to make sure those opinions do not influence their actions.
Okay. Choked up a little bit at the end. He talked for a long, long time. Jacob Meister, you are one of our Democrats this evening. Nice to have you back.
Thank you.
You're an attorney. And as a partisan Democrat, do you have any question or problems at all with the communication that has been attributed to these two FBI agents, most importantly, Peter Strzok, who's had an integral part of not only investigating Hillary Clinton, but also being part of the investigation looking into Donald Trump and Russian involvement, given the very partisan nature of those tweets and comments?
Congress is going through somewhat of a witch hunt here with the investigation, and they're trying to, you know, at one point they were when Mueller was brought in, yeah, they were praising him. They were praising Comey as being great and nonpartisan, and you know, now the investigation has taken some turns. I think there's a bit of a witch hunt going on. You know, the tweets, were they appropriate? Absolutely not. But are they indicative of an unfair process? Or I think not. And the Republicans have been now in recent weeks, because the noose is tightening around the president's neck, all of a sudden they've got problems with the process, and they're, you know, putting the FBI under attack. And I think it's the investigation, Mueller, just needs to go forward and let justice take its course.
Okay. Michael Lotus is our card-carrying Republican, one of our card-carrying Republicans, a Trump supporter from the get-go. And you have been critical of the investigation and the Mueller staff almost from the get-go as well. But to what extent do the revelations of last week change things in the court of public opinion?
I'd need survey data to know what the public thinks. My impression is that it confirms my sense that the operation is meant to It's meant to take down the president, and they're looking for the means to do that. As far as whether the—
And when you say they, who do you mean by they?
Mueller and his team of Democrat partisans and supporters of Hillary Clinton, and the basically it's a, I don't know how this really happened, but there you go. You look at who these people are. That's their goal. They're there to take out the president.
Rebecca Abraham is one of our other Democrats. Rebecca?
I think it's been a fair investigation so far. Mueller was appointed and worked through Republican administrations as well as Democrats. I don't.
No, but I don't think we're really talking about Mueller right now. We're talking about whether or not Mueller, as Mr. Integrity, can have on his staff. We just know of a couple of them, and what they've said. I mean, literally. I mean, put your partisan hat aside if you can. Can you look at those comments back and forth and believe that that person or those two people would actually be able to objectively look at an investigation and charges against Donald Trump or his campaign?
I do. I mean, you're never going to get anyone who is completely in a box unbiased in any way, shape, or form.
I'm not so sure about that, but I challenge that. But.
Like Jake, pretty much I echo everything Jacob said. They were praising him when they praised Comey, then they weren't praising
but
Comey.
But this is not about Comey. This is
about the
FBI. I want to hear Kathy Salvey or other Republican weigh in.
And I do agree with Jacob on one thing. There is a witch hunt. But the witch hunt is in Congress. Congress is shedding light to the truth. The witch hunt is Comey and 30 partisan investigators, many of whom are card-carrying Democrats, many of whom helped in the re-election or the attempted election of Hillary Clinton. They are a partisan group. This was shown by these emails. And there is a witch hunt. They are intended to bring down President Trump.
Kathy, let me challenge you on one point.
You
have said that there's a lot of partisans as part of the Mueller team, okay? There may be Democrats. There may be Democrats who contributed to Democratic campaigns. So we know they're Democrats. But we don't have any smoking rhetorical gun like we have with Peter Skorich with the degree of venom and hatred he has for Donald Trump.
And he was one of the key investigators in the case against Hillary Clinton and her in emails, and we know what happened to the language of that. We know that nothing came
and,
out of that.
And in the Trump investigation.
In the Trump
He's sort of the Forrest Gump. He's like everywhere.
Let's
in this
go
case.
Back to the very beginning. You remember that Attorney General Sessions recused himself, and then the Deputy Rosenstein appointed Mueller. And, of course, at that time, Mueller was praised. There's nothing
Mr. Integrity.
Question. But look at where we've come. The question was there collusion with Russia by the President Trump's team prior to the election? We found there has been none. But what are they after now? We don't find they are investigating the Clinton Fund. We're not finding any. We know there's
collusion. But if we
know
I can interrupt, that's okay,
Rebecca,
changing
but
the topic a little bit.
No, Rebecca, I want to go back to Rebecca.
We do know that $500,000 was paid by Russia to
Kathy, we're going far afield of my question, because the question tonight, and I want everybody who's out there in radio TV land to kind of focus with your questioning, at least for the next segment or so. I want to specifically focus on the FBI, specifically Peter Strach and Lisa Page, those two, because I don't think anyone means to besmirch the entire reputation of the FBI. We're talking about two people. They may be bad apples, but let's discuss it and whether or not they can look beyond their personal hatred of the president and be objective. That's the question. Back shortly. Chris Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8029. We're talking about the testimony last week and the hearing into the allegations that at least a couple of FBI agents went way beyond the pale in some of the things they said about Donald Trump. And the question is, because they were part of this investigation, leading this investigation to some extent, should everybody be suspect of the results that they come out with? By the way, I want to repeat what I said at the beginning of the program. President Trump has said he is not considering firing special counsel Mueller. Jacob, you wanted to make
a comment. Yeah, I just wanted to go back to my earlier comment where I said it's a witch hunt by Congress. And I should clarify that, you know, it's a very classic maneuver that when you don't like how an investigation's going, you go after the investigator. And then we've seen that. We saw that with Comey. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, there's
with Ken Starr.
We've seen it with Ken Starr. I mean, Richard Nixon famously mm-hmm. did it. And it's just a very typical tactic. And I look at it and say, if there's problems within Mueller's team, let Mueller handle it. Mueller is an even-handed, fair prosecutor. Everybody's agreed that that's the case. It's his team. If there's problems with his team, let him handle it as
now,
appropriate.
The question is, he did handle it. I mean, he was the one that discovered and took him off the case. So he gets credit for that. He didn't announce it right away, so he gets not so much credit for that. But I guess in putting your team together, because on this program, I think, Michael, you might have been part of it. In the early days when this team was being put together, there were questions about that there were a lot of Democratic fingerprints or at least names on checks that they had written to Democrats. There was some question from the beginning before Mueller came out and said anything. So I'm just wondering if this guy is Mr. Integrity, as everyone seemed to think he is. And I'm not challenging his integrity. I'm challenging maybe the way in which he conducted and put his team together, that some of these things should have been red flags. And I guess my question, if an FBI agent has said what he said about Donald Trump to his girlfriend and also an FBI lawyer, if that communication was going on, I wonder where in the before he was caught, before Robert Mueller, you know, moved him out of this, you know, key spot in the Russian investigation, I'm wondering where is the integrity of Peter Skorch and Ms. Mueller, or Ms. Page, rather. I'm wondering where their integrity was. I wonder at some point did they say, wait a minute, Bob, I want to take you aside. I want to just this is a heads up to you. I've said some things about the president that if they ever come out, it's going to make me look bad, and it's going to make you look bad, and it's going to destroy the integrity of everything that you want to do here. So aren't we really talking about an absolute lack of integrity or an aggressive pursuit of the quality of his staff during the preparation process, Rebecca?
I mean, I'm sure throughout history, I think we all know some of the history of the FBI. Employees of any agency are never perfect. In the 60s, they were spying on Dr. King.
Yes.
They were tapping his phone. So, were they perfect in the 60s? No. Are employees of any federal agency perfect at any time and unbiased? Probably not. Is that a black mark on Mueller's entire investigation? I don't think so.
I think there's something a little simpler going on here that need not be so malicious but still is bad for Mueller and any trust in him. If you got a criminal investigation, a normal criminal investigation, the people working on it are convinced, say, that there's a mafia operation. And they're there to gather sufficient admissible evidence to prove beyond a reasonable doubt to put those guys in jail. It's not a witch hunt. That's their job, is to prove the thing. A special prosecutor stands in an odd position. They're prosecutors, and they think like prosecutors, yet we expect them in this case to be doing something like an objective investigation and then give us an objective report. I think what you have here instead is people who are thinking like someone who are there to make a case and get a conviction or get a result, which is what they're ordinarily expected to do. The whole thing is structured wrong, and we probably shouldn't have it at all. And they should be struggling to be even-handed, and I don't think they are.
And I think it also in this particular case, since it was suspect by some at the beginning, was that you had Mueller investigating what happened in the Russia collusion investigation. But that also takes into place the conduct of James Comey. Now, we have all known from Mueller and Comey, they've been friends, I mean more than just casual friends, for 30 years. And he is one of the people that, you know, should be not investigated, certainly interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, what is the relationship between Peter Skorch, and I know I'm screwing his name, Peter Skorch, and James Comey? I mean, he may be a huge fan of James Comey in addition to hating Donald Trump, but we don't have those those emails or these texts. By the way, they're texts; they're not tweets. I want to be clarified by that. But we don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
So here you have a guy, and again, I think the key point about him is that he was in on the interview with Hillary Clinton, and they decide they're not going to indict, and then he is involved in the discussion, the investigation of President
Trump.
Just a
quick point, more than that. Not only was he in on the Hillary Clinton investigation, he revised the phrasing of the publication of their conclusions that took out language that would have led to an indictment. He insulated her from that.
Suspect? Is that suspect, Jacob?
This is getting far afield again, and I keep looking at this. I'm like, the Republicans want to talk about everything, but the issues which are under investigation, they want to start pointing the fingers at the prosecutors. They want to start pointing the fingers at Hillary Clinton, of all things. Okay. Hillary Clinton's irrelevant to what Donald Trump did and the Russia probe. And this is just classic trying to obfuscate and avoid the real issue, which is whether there's a fair investigation going on or not.
But isn't this the key point as to whether or not this is a fair investigation?
Okay, where are we going with this? We have an organization, Mueller's team, unlimited resources, unregulated by anybody, with unlimited access to information toward that investigation. What's their goal now? To determine whether there was any collusion with Russia between Trump or some of his team. Right. We've already...
Right. Theft of emails from the DNC and their involvement in it. That's serious, serious stuff. That's serious meddling in the fundamental institutions that we have in this country.
Well, that's the issue.
That's what's important. Whether there were tweets or texts is...
What we do know is that there was a dossier, a fake dossier, that has the hands of the DNC and Democratic operatives on it.
I don't know what's fake.
From a British intelligence officer who
retired,
help me with my, make sure I'm accurate on my facts.
You don't want to blame the Brits for this.
There's been a
fair amount of that dossier that's been substantiated.
Which was peddled by Democratic operatives, and no credible news agency picked up on it.
This was not a Democratic dossier. This dossier was actually
fusion.
Used by Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Was used by Republicans initially.
But GPS fusion was behind this dossier. What I'm suggesting, you say that what are these illegal wiretap, the WikiLeaks has disassociated themselves from any Russian connection. But even assuming that there was a Russian connection there, there is nothing, and there hasn't been anything that brings it back to Trump or anybody from the Trump team.
What in the dossier do you think is accurate?
Oh, boy, now you're challenging my memory. But there have been reports that there were portions of the dossier that dealt with Trump's involvement with Russia, Russian investments that have been fairly substantiated.
The most salacious part of that dossier, which did get some
coverage.
You may never
know if that's true or not.
Well, I will argue this, and this is about the president's sexual appetite with prostitutes, which made him a mockery, late-night comics. Saturday Night Live did a whole thing taking that as gospel. There is absolutely no truth to any of those statements. If there was tape, if there was videotape of Donald Trump doing what he allegedly did with prostitutes, don't you think that video would be all over the internet?
Not necessarily if the Russians have it.
Now, here's a question that needs to be answered on
I disagree with that.
I mean, we may never know. This is a question.
The footprints of that dossier go back. You were correct. It started with Republicans. But then there was the Democrats were involved with that. And that company, GPS, they were a representative of a relative of one of the FBI investigators worked for that company. I mean, it's the appearance of impropriety. And I'm just saying is that what happened last week.
In the political world, dossiers are very common, and they happen in every political
rally. You always
want
dirt on your opponent, always. And you would take a meeting with anybody that came to you and said, I've got dirt on your opponent. No, there isn't any politician that wouldn't including Donald Trump Jr.
And they spend hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to assemble that information into dossiers. I guarantee you that there were multiple dossiers on every single presidential candidate – And on those who never even announced becoming presidential candidates that were just thinking about
Rebecca's
it.
Got
it
even outside of the dots, if you look beyond that, I mean, Paul Manafort, if you need a smoking gun for collusion, his campaign manager, second campaign manager, worked for Russia and Ukraine and was hiding millions of dollars. That's a smoking gun.
The one that was fired by Donald Trump.
After Paul Manafort's job was to rope the delegates for the convention was his main job.
Yeah.
And then his main job was over and he probably looked suspicious. Every kind of political insider I knew was like, Paul Manafort works for the Russians.
In
Everyone kind of knew that. And when it got public, then he didn't need him anymore. Switched campaign managers.
Republicans, we'll hear from them. We'll hear from callers. 1-800-723-8289. Do you believe in the integrity of the FBI in the Mueller investigation? Yes or no? Live from Chicago, it's Saturday Night Live, The Experience. Tuesday through Sundays and open late on Wednesday nights at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Order tickets at museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Again, if you've not heard this news, President Trump said Sunday that he is not considering firing Special Counsel Robert Mueller, even as his administration was again forced to grapple with the growing Russia probe that has shadowed the White House for much of his initial year. Trump returned to the White House from Camp David and was asked if he would consider triggering the process to dismiss Mueller, who was investigating him, and the president said, no, I am not. Also, a very important point is that as you know, that John McCain is battling a brain cancer, and he has gone back to Arizona. And the president has said that Senator McCain is returning to Arizona to recover from the side effects from his brain cancer. I wish John well, he added, but I understand he'll come back if we need his vote, which hopefully we will not. Of course, that is the crucial vote for the Republican tax bill plan. And Rebecca Abraham, you shocked a lot of people on this program a few weeks ago when John McCain stepped up and basically stopped the dismantling of Obamacare. You are a professional in the healthcare field. You challenged then whether John McCain was capable of intelligently and effectively and mentally stable to cast that vote. I assume your concerns about the stability of Senator McCain are alive and well tonight.
Absolutely. There is absolutely no way he should fly back to Washington for that vote. He has glioblastoma, a very intense brain cancer. He is likely on pain medication. Any of us would not return to work with the same diagnosis. I heard he was critically ill a couple days ago, and they weren't sure if he was going to make it through the night. This is not somebody who should vote on behalf of millions of people in important legislation. And before he voted away, I preferred that health care bill was awful.
Which was your side. He voted for your side.
He voted for my
and
side.
And you still made this
and
comment.
And I still thought that it was inappropriate that when you're on high-dose pain medication, when you're getting when you have a malignant form of brain cancer, you probably shouldn't be in such a high-level decision-making job. Me and my husband discussed it. He wouldn't be at work.
I want to hear from our Republicans again, because once upon a time, John McCain was held in high esteem by Republicans, not so much by many Republicans now.
How
do you feel on just this point?
Just as a lawyer before, a Republican, I don't know that there's any – if he wanted to resign, he could resign. There'd be a process to replace him. He's cognizant enough to not want to do that and to say he's going to go and he's going to vote. If that's what he wants to do, that I don't think that there's anything in the law that says he has to do anything else. If he thinks he's up to it, it's his decision, and he should vote how he wants. I haven't been thrilled with McCain every time, but I hope he votes for the tax bill. That's all.
Kathy?
Is the question whether or not he should come back for a vote or not? If it
yes.
is, if he feels – if he's up to it? Then he's, by all means, vote.
Even if we don't know his mental capacity, we don't know his cognitive level.
That's between him and his physician.
It becomes a matter of public interest. I remember before the health care vote, John McCain was making some very bizarre public statements that had a lot of people taken aback. And there's an element of public interest here. So the voters should know what his mental, what his mental and physical capabilities are to be making these decisions.
Right.
There's no legal way to challenge his ability to make the vote. I mean, this is a debate in the court of public opinion.
Correct. I had my years on Capitol Hill, and I know we had a number of members who were known to be have progressed senility, and they. Their staff took them down to the floor.
So I wish they voted regularly.
And so it happens. I think it's unfortunate. I think ultimately it is up to voters, but there's nothing you can do.
As a public servant, it's unethical to vote on these matter, any matter.
You're a public servant, but
it doesn't make it right.
Let's avoid our partisanship here. I think there's some history.
I would say as a Democrat, you shouldn't go to the floor impaired.
There have been times when people have been wheeled in on their stretchers. I wish I had the history now throughout the history of our country for important votes.
In all parliamentary democracies, you have mortal people who get sick and die. And sometimes you have really close votes, and you have these dramatic moments where someone comes in who's not in great shape and votes. It happens pretty frequently.
As lawyers, and the three of us are lawyers, I think there were members of Congress who you and I as lawyers would not allow to sign a legal document because of concerns of capacity.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's an issue. That's an issue I probably beyond our ability to solve.
And I think this is not meant to disrespect John McCain, but John McCain has lived a heroic life, and I think in his heart and in his mind and in all parts of his body, when he goes, that great reward up yonder, he's going to want to go with his boots on, fighting that last fight, you know, and his fight may be that he will go to Washington and vote against the tax bill. That is a possibility with John McCain. So no one quite knows where John McCain is going to come down. I think the general thought at the moment is that he will probably support the tax bill in an attempt. He may believe in it, but that's the drama of John McCain. His entire life has been drama, and he's playing this drama right to at least the end of a very important political vote, and hopefully it is not the end of his life. But I think we have to be realistic and say that it very quite possibly is. And that drama, we're not going to know until the vote is called and whether John McCain is there or not, or as the president said, hopefully they can get it done without John McCain's vote. But we don't know that. Mm-hmm. It's the drama. Let's go to Brian, listening in Roselle, Illinois. He's listening on the Internet. Go ahead, Brian.
Hi. I wanted to comment on Robert Mueller and compare him to Donald Trump. Robert Mueller, after graduating Princeton, went into the United States Marine Corps and went to Vietnam and fought for our country and won a Bronze Star, whereas Donald Trump dodged the draft and supposedly told Howard Stern that his Purple Heart was not picking up VD while he was having sex with all these women in New York City. Okay. Robert Mueller is a man above reproach. You know, I am an independent. I despise Bill and Hillary Clinton. I'm not a partisan Democrat. I think both parties are very corrupt. But I wish the media would be honest in their assessment of Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a proven liar. He lies all the time. He behaves like an adolescent bully. But yet, you guys treat him like he's just your run-of-the-mill Republican who's been around forever. And
Ryan, let me just stop you for a second. I don't believe there's anybody in the media that treats Donald Trump like a run-of-the-mill Republican. All the things that you've just stated about Donald Trump, I agree with you. You know, we're talking about apples and oranges insofar as the integrity of the men involved and what they've done. The other reality is, knowing all of what we know about Donald Trump, he's the president of the United States, and more people, even though in the Electoral College, more people said, you know what, we're going to take this guy because we really don't like the alternative. So many of them held their nose and voted for Donald Trump. I think a lot more voted with great spirit for Donald Trump. So we know that's all yesterday's news. And by the way, I said a moment, I do not instantly challenge the integrity of Robert Mueller, okay? You say you agree with him. He's impeccable. Unless you know him, frankly, I don't know how you can make that comment. You really don't know. You think so. You're buying into the media spin that this guy is Mr. Integrity. And maybe he is. My argument tonight is, if you are as great as you are, and if you are the former director of the FBI, you should have been, and you could have been, more thorough in vetting the people you put on your team, because you should have been smart enough to know that every single member of that team was going to be reviewed because of the controversial nature of the investigation. That's all I'm saying. That maybe in this particular case, maybe Mr. Integrity wasn't Mr. Efficiency. That's my argument. And I realize this has this. And if an investigation goes on, and they come up with evidence that suggests that the president did wrong, I don't want the president to get away with colluding with the Russians. I really don't. I want a fair, objective investigation. And I think the evidence in the last couple of weeks or last week involving the FBI is questionable. It puts the investigation in question. And by the way, I also am not a believer that everything, you know, I, as a young man, I used to wrap myself in the flag of the FBI until I learned what the FBI did during the 1960s to Dr. King and a variety of other things, okay? They fell off my pedestal decades ago, and yet there are people in this country that have them up there as this paragon of virtue that never makes mistakes. They do make mistakes. In the past, I've called for the removal of J. Edgar Hoover's name from the building. He destroyed the reputation of the institution he created. Mm-hmm. And it's time for people to say, wait a minute, let's look at that. Let's not just automatically say that the FBI is so great and everything. They're not. They're human beings, too. And in this particular case, I'm not even besmirching the entire reputation of the FBI, because there's two bad apples. You know, there's a lot of people in this country that think all cops are bad because there are some bad cops. Well, you know, I think we got a couple of bad FBI agents. Unfortunately, they've been put in two very key positions to make important decisions on the future of this country and on the integrity of our election process. And in my view, based on what they said in their own words, they hung themselves. They hung themselves by saying what they want to do. I don't know how you can have the level of hatred for Donald Trump and go into an investigation that you're going to investigate this guy thoroughly and say the things that you said about Hillary Clinton and think that you can go into a secret interview with her and somehow look at her in an objective way. You can't do it. That's the issue here. Back shortly from Chicago. Along with Louis Prima, one of the great jazz songs of all time. She passed away today at 89 years old, and again, quite a talent. And again, that's one of my favorite songs of all time. So we will miss Keeley Smith, as I'm sure I speak for many others. By the way, just this is a very important point. The New York Times gets beaten up on this program, sometimes by me, frequently by callers. But I want to make a point, as I always like to do. It was the New York Times that reported that Mueller had ousted Strotz after hearing of the anti-Trump messages, and that was actually learned of the messages in late July. But it was the New York Times that shared this information with everybody else. So, again, they break stories. They break stories we like. When I say we, I mean those of a conservative bent. They break stories that we don't like. So keep that in mind the next time you want to trash the New York Times. Jim in Portland, Oregon, listening to us on KUFO. Go ahead.
Hello, Bruce. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I guess my point is bias is not necessarily a bad thing, but clearly this agent acted on his bias when he was involved with rewriting the Hillary Clinton exoneration per email. So this guy clearly had a bias, and at least in that case, he acted upon it. And even more concerning is it appears that him and his lover, or the woman he was having the affair with, appeared to have had a meeting with Andrew McCabe where they discussed having a plan in place, an insurance plan, against Donald Trump. to me, that's very troubling that there are more than one person near the top of the FBI that was involved in an effort to deny Donald Trump not only the election victory, but to put roadblocks in his way once he was elected. So it's acting right. upon the bias that really troubles me right. in this case.
And that was the, in fact, I think, Fritz, I think we have that that text message from Peter Strzok. Maybe we can put that up. If you've got it, let's put it up. I guess you don't have it, so we're not going to be able to quote from it. Oh, here it is. This is Strzok now. I want to believe the path you threw out for consideration in Andy's office. We think that is Andy McCabe, who was the deputy FBI director, that there's no way he, meaning Donald Trump, gets elected. But I'm afraid we can't take that risk. It's like an insurance policy in the unlikely event you die before you're 40. So, again, this is Strzok, who is this senior vice president or senior executive with the FBI, if we're intelligence. He's talking with his lady friend and who had an affair with, Lisa Page. He's describing and what should be done as insurance if the American people vote for Donald Trump. So I think that's the point you're referencing, Jim, and I think it's a very good point.
Absolutely.
And get all the salacious stuff aside. That's probably the smoking gun text that people will quote the most.
Absolutely. I mean, this guy clearly had a bias, and he acted on it.
More than that, it'd be great to know what is this insurance policy. What did he mean by that?
Absolutely.
Congress
right.
should subpoena from him all of his emails, all of his texts, personal texts, the communications he had with anybody. They should be able, we can do a search through for this term, see who else knows what it is, and get to the bottom of it.
I want to ask our Democrats, do you think, because some members of the House have called for another special prosecutor or counsel to look into these allegations of the FBI. Is that a wise thing to do? I'll get your response, Rebecca.
I think I feel like this is all deflection. Like, I kind of feel like we're all saying the same things over and over. I think we should just let the investigation continue. And I also want to add, I was kind of thinking during this, I don't think the general public, they care about this investigation, but I feel like they're much more concerned about the tax bill and economics and
yes.
jobs more than this. And I feel like these details, these texts that Fox is showing, I feel like the American people just don't care to dive in.
Let me ask you this question. Do you believe the American people have a right to see those texts?
Yeah, I do, because okay. I feel like they, I mean, did the employees act inappropriately? Yes. Does that mean we stop the investigation, hire a new special prosecutor, stop? No. We just let Mueller continue on.
It isn't even stopping one investigation. One investigation should go forward. The other question is, should there be a special prosecutor that looks into the actions of the FBI?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. This is when you don't like where the investigation's going. Okay. Investigate the investigator.
Not at all.
Investigate the investigator. Like, start attacking Mueller and his team. Mueller took care of the problem. Mueller is perfectly capable of handling it. If he had to, I mean, he made the determination. He acted appropriately. You don't start investigating the investigator. Then we're going to start investigating the investigator and the investigator, it's ridiculous.
I just feel like
there was a comment: the American people don't care. Let me remind you, this is the FBI.
Not this deep. They don't.
Listen,
they
the
care
FBI.
About taxes and jobs and
Mueller.
I agree with
Mueller that. And his
healthcare.
Mother. Oh, yeah. Okay. Mueller and his Peter Strzok had a very influential role to play in what happened with Hillary Clinton. We talked about Mueller is in charge of the whole team. Here's the question I think that needs to be answered, and it has to go to the FISA warrants. How did they get the FISA warrants that bugged Trump Tower? Remember, President Trump was laughed at when he suggested that there were wiretaps. Well, it turns out there were old-fashioned wiretaps. And what I want to know is, it was planned.
Hold on.
We're going to break.
We're going to pick it up in the second hour. And by the way, if you're doing a major investigation and you've got somebody as part of the investigators that's a little dicey, it can lead to a lot of speculation for years. The Warren Commission. When Alan Dulles, the former head of the CIA, was put on the Warren Commission, He was investigating the assassination of the man who fired him as the head of the CIA. Questionable. Questionable then. That's why we're talking about it 55 years later. It is the integrity of the investigators that is the hallmark of a good investigation. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
Hey y'all, I'm Blake Shelton. I love that country music connects people all over this great nation, but unfortunately so does something else, childhood hunger. 15 million children struggle with hunger in America. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks works to rescue our surplus food to help provide billions of meals to families in need across the country. Join the fight against hunger at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Live from Chicago, it's Saturday Night Live, The Experience. Tuesday through Sundays and open late on Wednesday nights at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Order tickets at museum.tv. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Rebecca Abraham, Michael Lotus, Jacob Meister, and Kathy Salvey. Our program tonight coming to you from our own base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you want to email me a comment, it's Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. You want to tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And again, of course, you can join us on the World Wide Web. In this hour, we're going to talk about the Republicans' big plan. Allegedly, they have the votes to pass the Republican tax plan, the tax cut plan. And again, I'm going to go over some of the specifics, and then let's get our reaction from our guests. We have two Republicans and two Democrats. Now, the overall GOP plan, here's some of the bullet points. It creates seven tax brackets. The top rate drops to 37%. The child tax credit goes to $2,000. There are standard deductions will double, which is good news for some. It also includes a $10,000 cap on state and local taxes, mortgage interest deduction capped at $750,000. The Obamacare tax penalty is totally eliminated under this plan. The tax rate for top earners drops from 39.6% to 37%. The corporate tax rate is cut from 35% to 21%, and the pass-through company owners get 20% deduction. In addition, the top, this is how the Senate bill is analyzed, the top tenth of 1% of taxpayers would get 42% of the benefits. However, another way to look at that is that paying for tax reform and reducing the debt, according to the Treasury Secretary, there'll be tax cuts, there'll be rollback of regulations, there will be infrastructure improvements, and there will be welfare reform. That's from the Department of the Treasury as early as today. However, another way to look at this is the tax plan's effect on the nation's deficit. The tax plan adds $1 trillion to the deficit, according to the Joint Commission on taxation. So those are the summaries. Those are some of the points. Let me start with you, Michael. We've been talking about tax cuts and reform here for a long time.
Yeah.
Are you ecstatic about this bill?
I'm not ecstatic about it. What I'm kind of happy to see is Trump made a few fairly specific promises about taxes during the campaign, and he's tried to keep them. One thing he wanted to do was get our corporate tax rate consistent with our foreign competitors, and we're a lot closer on that. So that's a promise kept. He wanted to get the individual deduction, which mostly impacts your lower-income earners, to be higher, and it's doubled. Child deduction is added. So that's relief for lower-income families. So he's keeping his promises. There's a lot of things in here. It's a lot of detail. It's a very long bill.
Rebecca Abraham, one of our Democrats.
This
what
bill,
do you think?
It disgusts me. It actually, I wake up in the morning and I feel sick over this.
Why?
It's going to gut the American middle class and lower classes. How corporations already don't pay enough, and we're going to give them more of a break. They don't provide jobs. People are living paycheck to paycheck. People already can't afford housing. They can't afford medicine. It's a nightmare.
So as a political document, isn't it perfect for the Democrats to rail against and come back to power in 2018? So is it
Absolutely.
Is it good
yes.
ammunition?
It's great ammunition, but once you pass something, it's easier to pass something than to repeal something, and that is my concern. That's going to be very hard to pull this back, even though it expires. The nightmare is it keeps going, and we're really going to give a tax break to billionaires?
Kathy Salvi, a Republican.
Oh, bosh. This is the goose that laid the golden egg mentality. I don't know how any Democrat or any American or any Republican can't do anything but support this. I wish it went further. But corporations employ people. They employ people who have families. And if we don't have corporations, we'll go through any American town, you'll see boarded up industry. We need to bring manufacturing back to this country. And I think that this is a good step in that direction, because if we have factories open, which has happened with President Trump, then they're going to employ people who raise families in our communities instead of
pay taxes.
Pay taxes. It will revitalize the economy. Here's the difference. The difference is this country is not great because it's the greatest socialist country in the world.
We have a great socialist country.
No, this is socialist policies something? Have brought this country down. And I want to get
Jacob's response to the quality of the bill and, as a Democrat, the politics of this bill.
I read the entire Senate version. I sat down. I took an entire Saturday, read through it. I am appalled. And what is not being covered is the Christmas gifts being given away to special interests,
such as
private airplanes, yes. private jets deduction. You know, you get benefits. The liquor industry gets huge tax savings. Owners of golf courses. Country clubs, ka-ching, ka-ching. You've got insurance companies, life insurance companies. This packed
you
with benefits
this is
for them.
Bad for lawyers.
Even they're giving fetuses college the ability to have college savings accounts, but they're taking away college from actual
yes,
from actual students. You've got hedge fund managers, ka-ching, ka-ching. This thing is loaded with
interests. But you said it's bad for lawyers. Which I got.
It is. Businesses.
Since we have three lawyers at the table, why is it bad for lawyers?
Small businesses, you mentioned there's a 20% deduction. That doesn't go if you make over $140,000 a year. That goes away. But small businesses across the board, particularly small businesses that are on the bubble or seasonal businesses that have to borrow maybe to make payroll in the lean months so that they can keep staff employed are going to lose deductions. They are going to be strangled as small businesses. Meanwhile, the wealthy coming out great.
The student loan deductions are gone.
Here's my question, okay? The Democrats are painting a picture that the sky is falling. The Republicans are painting a picture that things are going to be better. Maybe not for everybody. And again, the news media, as they're reporting this, trying to clarify it for the American people, my assessment is that they're saying that the middle class is going to be a minor winner in this, in some cases a loser, and that the big winners, the big players, are going to be the corporations and the wealthy people. That's the way the media is framing the issue right now. Now, in the court of political opinion upon which this program is based, is this a document that's going to result in more Republicans elected in 2018 or are the Republicans going to be running in a defensive position, even though they control the White House and two branches of government?
I think that how well the Republicans do next year and whether Trump can be reelected will be driven primarily by how well the economy is doing overall, like it always is. And
will this get credit improving the economy?
The lower corporate tax rate may not have lead to a huge decline in revenue from that because it's too high. That may lead to higher investment, may lead to more jobs. The analysis seems to be that this bill isn't going to be a huge boost to the economy as it's written.
When we come back, I want to hear from Kathy and the rest of our panel. 1-800-723-8289. Where do you come down? The new Republican tax plan. Are you excited about it? I'm Bruce Duplantis. Bruce Duplantis joining you tonight. One way, if you're listening to the show this evening, take out your next pay stub and put that stub away. And 2 years, 4 years from now, look at the pay stub you have and ask yourself, am I doing better or am I doing worse? Just keep your own, because it's between now and then, you're going to have both sides. Your eyes are going to glaze over as this argument continues in public debate. But again, each individual is going to have to decide whether or not their situation is better than it was 2 years or 4 years ago. Kathy Salvey, you wanted to make a point.
I do. A rising tide lifts all ships. We are taxed too much. Businesses, corporations, manufacturing particularly, have left our shores and gone elsewhere. What we need, and I believe this tax plan is in the right direction, is we need to revitalize the economy with meaningful jobs. We need to open up manufacturers so that they come back. We need to repatriate them and have meaningful jobs for our college grads who are getting out of college.
This bill doesn't do it. This is giving Amazon and Disney more money.
They already only pay workers $10 an hour. You think they're going to say, we got this tax break. Here's $25.
Government should not be the major employer. We need private business revitalized. And I believe this is a step in the right direction.
But, Kathy, just speaking, you believe that if corporations have more money, they're not going to stash their money offshore. And they're going to invest that money in improving their operations and maybe spreading some of that money around to their workers.
Jimmy Carter a number of years put a tax on yachting. He says that's a luxury tax. And what happened? It put our yacht manufacturers in this country out of business. How did that help?
The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and thinking that the result's going to be different. We have done this. We have been down this road. We know it does not work. You give the corporations the money, they're going to take it overseas, they're going to hoard it, they're going to keep it. They are not going to reinvest. We saw it. I mean, it's whether you call it trickle-down economics, supply-side economics, we come up with new phrases for it every generation. George Bush tried it. Ronald Reagan tried it. It didn't work. George Bush tried it. It was a big-time failure that ended up ballooning the deficits and leaving – and it's what the Republicans do is they leave these huge deficits and then – who cleans it up? But you have Bill Clinton closed the gap. Obama, absolutely. And then you have to cut social services
to pay for the deficit that we just gave as a gift. And they're not even shy about who they're giving this gift to. Lindsey Graham said, I have to do this or my donors won't give me any more money. They used to hide this stuff and they don't even hide it anymore. That's what's really sickening.
So is it going to end up biting the Republicans come next November? You betcha.
We've got a track record right now of
Virginia, we've got Georgia, we've got Oklahoma, we've got Alabama. It's just huge.
You're on a roll.
It's huge. The Democratic base is enthused. Okay, we've got 10%.
I'm going to ask you another question, okay? You say you're on a political roll because you ticked off the last three, and obviously Doug Jones' victory. I think there were some other issues involved in that. But again, he's been on television a couple of times. He seems like a respectable, honorable guy. I think he will be a more effective and efficient and respectable member of the United States Senate than would Judge Moore. Okay, I totally agree with that.
Right.
And again, I think he may end up He may not be such the hero in such a hero in a couple of months when he starts to vote on some things, because he wants to get reelected, and he's not going to get reelected if he follows Chuck Schumer down too many alleys. Okay, he's thinking of his own future.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, okay, because the people who got him into office were primarily African American women, and the Democratic Party needs to legislate better for African Americans and women.
He can do that in certain areas, but not necessarily. I don't think when he runs for reelection, I don't think he's going to run on a reelection platform of a lot of very super liberal things. I think he's going to find, as he said, I'm going to look for common ground where I can work with the Republicans. He's thinking of reelection right away, as every United States senator does. So there's nothing wrong with that.
He's going to be playing to, he's going to be playing to his electorate in Alabama,
as
he
every
needs
politician
to be.
Should.
Sure.
Here's my question to everybody, okay? The Democrats, you're chomping at the bit, you know, you're saying if this goes, it's going to be the worst thing for the Republicans, which I would say politically, then you should be enthusiastic about it because it's giving you an issue. Here's my point. The only issue that you have communicated to the American people thus far is we are resisting. Now, the latest thing is you have a growing group in the House and Senate that is talking about the impeachment of the president. And so that could be your issue, plus the Republicans represent the rich. This bill represents the rich. So you've got, you know, you have played class warfare in many campaigns. You mostly have not been successful in that, using that as a thing. But maybe it'll work. How do you say to the middle class, how do you say to anyone that you want to vote Democratic, okay? We're the party that opposed the tax bill. We're the bill that's going to push for impeachment. And by the way, if you like how the stock market is doing, we're going to risk that. Mm-hmm. We're going to throw out the president that has helped keep Wall Street and keep investors going. And you know what? We're going to run the risk because we don't like their economic policies. We don't like this president. And by the way, vote for us. And you know, there may be some risk that your stock portfolio is going to go down.
I don't think Americans buy it. We don't have enough money to have them.
Huh?
We don't have stock portfolios. My generation, we don't have stock portfolios.
Bingo.
I'm a nurse married to a physician.
Bingo.
We don't have a stock portfolio. We don't have enough money. We have student loans. We just bought a house. We barely were able to afford that. Yes, America's listening. A physician and a nurse, we scraped by to buy our first home together.
Okay.
And we were discussing, we're one of the lucky ones. We are firmly upper middle class, and we are very fortunate. We both came from lower middle class backgrounds. My husband's a son of an immigrant family from India. If we were struggling to do it, we can only imagine how everyone else is doing. And that's why I do this work. That's why I'm here today.
But
saying Wall Street's doing well?
No. From a political standpoint, you've made and you've shared with the audience how it's affected you personally. As I said a few moments ago, everybody should make that calculation based on, you know, their last pay stub. But my question to you is, when you're trying to win a majority of elections for House and the Senate, how are you going to convince other Democrats or independents who maybe don't think as you do? They're possible Democratic voters, but aren't you asking them to run the risk that if they vote your way and they throw the president out, the stock market's going to tank and everybody's going to
lose? Look at Virginia. Look at Alabama.
Right.
Look at Oklahoma.
It's
the whole spectrum of issues that Trump and the right wing have come to stand for. The Democrats are absolutely enthused. Whether you're talking about the environment, whether you're talking about health care, whether you're talking about the tax plan, whether you're talking about the protests that are happening with neo-Nazis that the White House is winking at.
Doesn't the voter first and foremost care how much more money is in my pocket?
And the voter
may be morally, horrified by what happened in Charlottesville. But, you know, they're going to check their portfolio every day and say, you know what, I'm going to keep going where
the
we're
the voter is not checking the portfolio. They don't have the
– I actually agree with that.
Especially under age 35.
Michael.
Not so much.
Trump's reelection will turn on how the overall economy is doing, how whether people have jobs, whether we have growth, whether people feel like there's hope for the future. And it's too far away to say.
And whether or not they can get more women and blacks to vote.
Well, it's all kinds of things that go into it. But the key determinant will be whether the basic policy thrust that Trump and the Republicans are pushing works, as I think it probably will, or is it a disaster, as our Democrat friends are suggesting it's going to be. Now, the midterm elections, a little earlier, the things that are happening now aren't going to have fully taken effect, and it's tough to say what that's going to be driven by. And as to the stock market, it's always a bad idea to bet, you know, anything or take credit for it, because it goes up and down and radically does so for reasons that you can't control politically.
Let's go to Mike in Spokane, Washington, listening to us on KXLY. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Bruce.
Merry Christmas
to you. Thank you for taking my call. Thank you. My question is, where does this tax plan help the tax plan for the working poor? Where is that plan? We know corporations benefit from this plan. So where do the working poor, those who work two jobs, how does it benefit them?
When I last looked at how much taxes would increase or decrease for different income brackets, it looks like it actually hurts the working poor more than anything. You lose a lot of deductions, and it looks like people making under $20,000 will have to pay $700 more, and people under $40,000 will have to pay $1,000 more. Meanwhile, people making over $250,000 a year will get $5,000 back. And that's backwards.
Kathy, are those accurate in your view?
No. You know what? Just the...
I have it pulled up already.
No. I know your figures are your figures. We need to make us... We're all taxed too much, whether or not you're the working poor or the working, hardworking middle class. Every single person who brings home a paycheck will see a tax benefit, and they will have more money of their own, hard-earned money to spend on the way they choose. And the getting government out of my pocketbook is the goal of this bill, and that's why it doesn't go far enough, but it's a step in the right direction. And it is far different than the tax increases that we got by the prior administration.
Take your pay stub, look at your stock portfolio, put it in a lockbox, and every year, go look at it and measure it against where you are at that moment in time. And then you will be able to make the final decision as to whether this Republican tax plan, if it passes, was good for you. Back shortly from Chicago. Live from Chicago, it's Saturday Night Live, The Experience. Tuesday through Sundays, and open late on Wednesday nights at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Order tickets at museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back. We're talking about the future of Alabama politics. We've talked a lot about Alabama politics and Judge Roy Moore. Judge Moore has been defeated. It hasn't come out of his lips yet. He hasn't acknowledged it. But this was a real win for the Republicans, wasn't it, Kathy?
Many people have said that.
What about you? Would you say that? Is he an albatross you really wanted around your neck?
Well, let me tell you what I face as an attorney. Okay. I've had a couple fellas talk to me this week and say, you know, how is this going to change what's happening in the workplace, the whole issue of sexual harassment, what constitutes harassment, and actually have sought out some advice on that. So I think to bring this issue to the forefront, I think, is a healthy thing overall, both for the private workplace and in government, because mm-hmm. we've learned through these last weeks that there's, you know, the slush fund of payoffs to people in government. I mean, I think it's healthy that this issue is being brought to the fore for a healthier workplace environment. And
a conservative Democrat vote in the U.S. Senate is probably the best thing you could hope for, other than having Roy Moore as a Republican incumbent.
Who knows? Maybe he'll become a Republican in a year or two.
The entire thing in Alabama, where Steve Bannon interjected himself, and you've got a guy nominated who was going to be a very difficult guy to elect, even in a deep red state, was a disaster that didn't have to happen. And then the fact that this guy had this background that was used against him that seemed to have enough merit to it that he couldn't make it go away. So it was a unique and catastrophic scenario. It's very unfortunate.
Let's now switch gears from that election to the issues that were certainly part of this campaign, and that were allegations that Judge Moore denied but didn't do so in a very efficient way. And that's charges that are made against a man or an elected official about things that took place or allegedly took place years before. A couple of weeks ago when you were on this program, Rebecca, you basically said that in this climate, women should always be taken for telling the truth. You acknowledged sort of that you didn't think women would ever abuse this situation and not tell the truth.
I said that a very small fraction would, that most people who, you know, accuse somebody of something, most of the time are honest people. And in this climate, we've seen that most of them have been honest. Except for the one put up by a Republican PAC who tried to sting the Washington Post.
Does everyone at this table agree that the issue of sexual harassment is an issue that's going to be, it's going to be difficult for each party because there's going to be culprits in each party?
I think it transcends.
It's a bipartisan.
It transcends party, and it's something that needs to be dealt with. It basically, you know, as we have in Congress, more and more women who are taking leadership roles. It's something that can be tackled and brought to the forefront, and it needs to be because it's gone on for far too long. I think we've seen with Al Franken taking the high ground, as painful as it was for him and as painful as it was for a lot of his followers to swallow that you're losing one of your progressive leaders, it was leadership at its best in his resignation, because he took the high ground, which
is good for the party.
It's good for the party. It's good for the issue, and it's good for an issue that he cares about to recognize his weakness and say, "We can't tolerate this anymore, and I'm stepping down." And we should use mine as an example.
I agree with all of that. That again, he fell on the sword, and it didn't help. I mean, it didn't. He had to do it because there were so many women and some men in the colleagues that said, you know, get out of here.
They had pictures.
But I know they had one picture. But the question that I have for the Republicans is, okay, Doug Jones is now the winner. Judge Roy Moore should be in the rearview mirror. What do the Republicans, or how can the Republicans effectively deal with the Democrats on this issue as long as there are allegations against the president? Michael.
It's going to be a campaign issue when he runs again. That's what it's going to have to be.
What about other Republicans in the House and Senate? Because there will be some Republicans that will be caught up in all this. What is their position on this issue when they take it to the women of America to vote?
Plenty of Republicans would love to get rid of Donald Trump, maybe most. So if they can turn this into an issue so they can give him a primary to take him out, they may do it. A lot of Republicans didn't want him. He defeated 16 guys women who all were established, connected Republicans.
Is this the issue? Is this the defining issue that will separate the Republican Party further in 2018, Kathy? Republicans that don't have the guts to stand up and challenge the president, and you have others that are basically going to say, we agree that women have to be believed. Mitch McConnell basically said he believed the accusers of Roy Moore. I mean, that's just another issue that I think separates Republicans, doesn't it?
This is a hot issue now. People have been dealing with harassment. Look at Weinstein brought it up. Let's see what happens in Hollywood, how that
He's
is going to change.
The loss of more jobs than anybody I can think of in recent years. Harvey Weinstein.
Will that be an electoral issue a year from now in the midterms, or will it, how about three years down the line? It's look at how fluid issues are. I don't know that it's going to be the issue in 3 years.
Do you think it should be? My question is, what is the Republican position? If you're running for the House or you're running for the Senate, what is the Republican position on whether or not women who step forward should be believed? Should there be a statute of limitations? I can't frankly believe even today that the issue of sort of a slush fund to pay off settlements, I can't believe that that is still going on now, and it was just revealed a couple of weeks ago.
And your public dollars are being used to pay off congressional staffers
that's the point.
And others.
Gross.
I mean,
why should that be put on the table, and we should see every piece of paper associated with that, and if there were agreements that supposedly insulated these congressmen, they should be voided. And I don't care. This is not a partisan issue. Every single congressman who benefited from that at taxpayer expense should be forced to tell the taxpayers and his voters what in heck was going on. And I don't know. I don't know how it's going to play out. They could all be Republicans or all Democrats for all I know. It doesn't matter.
Do you know what happened? And I hate to bring it back to President Clinton, but it was the issue. We had woman after woman after woman, and we had women who were apologists, the same women now who are turning in accusing this president. The election. His second
exactly
election.
Why our culture needs to change. Let me finish.
His reelection ended the issue. I'm not saying that that was the correct thing, but those were the rules of the game, and we never heard about it again. Now there tends to be
We did hear about it. We had a huge women's march over it.
He was impeached.
He was impeached over it.
If you're talking about Trump, you can't say it was the end of the election and everybody moved
here
on.
We are.
There are so many women.
We are here. Since day one, there's no Democrat that I know of, including the two of you, who have given this presidency a chance, and I implore you today to find one thing you could say in this last year that has been a success, because you and I are Americans. We're not a Democrat or Republican. If we can't show that we can be united behind this presidency, then we are not serving this country's greatest needs. And I think you should respect the electorate. A year ago, he was elected. He was sworn in last January, and I haven't seen any public Democrat give him or his agenda one kudo or one vote. It's been a battle since the women's march and before.
But he doesn't deserve it. He shouldn't be in that executive office.
We're not Republican and Democrat. We're Americans. The listening audience here is like the rest of America. They want to see
right.
where we
and
can
because
come together.
I'm patriotic, I feel like he is an embarrassment to the office, an embarrassment to our nation. And he didn't even win the popular vote.
Rebecca, in all deference and respect for your position, you know what, Rebecca? The people who believe like you lost. You lost an election. Every 4 years, there's people that lose elections. You know what? And this is the first time in the history of the public, at least in my lifetime, this is the first time that the losers didn't acknowledge, hey, we're losers.
Right.
You're losers. And you know why you're losers? Because you don't have control of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And you know what? What's worse than being a loser? You're a sore loser.
When Obama.
You are sore.
Let's bring it back to what you just said.
Why don't you bring it back to what you just said? What you just said. Bring it back to my challenge of what you just said. You lost an election. You're sore losers. You're never going to give the other side another. And by the way, here's the other point. What you're starting right now with a sore loser, what worries me is that whatever the next election is, the other side, they're going to be sore.
Mitch McConnell got up there and said, we are going to make it our goal for the next 8 years to not pass anything, give him an inch.
No, it's different. They obfuscated.
But here's the problem. We have this culture. We have this political culture, which started, frankly, when I worked on Capitol Hill, there was collegiality. People worked together and reached across the aisle, whether it was McCain, whether there was respect for differences of opinion, there wasn't this blockade mentality It was Newt Gingrich brought to Washington a burn it down attitude.
Ted Kennedy was the first well-known member of the United States Senate that called the President of the United States, George Bush, Bush the Second, he called him a liar. He called him a liar over deliberately misrepresenting the facts and the buildup.
But it was Newt Gingrich with the impeachment.
Once you call someone a liar, You can't take that back. He used the L word. He is the one that did more to change the climate of how people operate in this country than anybody else.
You wouldn't say that the impeach?
I'm gonna let you make the case about Gingrich.
Gingrich? Okay.
He was no saint. Back shortly. We're back on the air, folks. Watch what you're saying. Everybody's going to hear what you have to say. Here's a point that I would like to make. During the Obama years, I would agree that there was a large number of people who opposed Barack Obama. They despised him for whatever the reason. They were the constituents. I don't think there was a large number of elected officials that would use the rhetoric of their constituents in the way they denounce the President of the United States. I just don't think that happened, because you have the leaders and you have the followers. In this case, you have a base of voters out there who feel like Rebecca. They despise Donald Trump. They believe everything that Peter Skoch said in those FBI. It was like he was channeling their hatred of Donald Trump. And you have elected officials who, I think, they're picking up the rhetoric of their followers. We're not seeing a reduction of the rhetoric. You're seeing with some of their elected officials, including the Speaker of the House and with Chuck Schumer, you're seeing an escalation of the rhetoric of the masses. And that's a big and that is based on a decision that they made. We are going to give him not one inch. He's illegitimate. We're not going to let him get anything. They will not acknowledge that they blew the election because they had a bad candidate and she ran a bad campaign. They just can't imagine that the smartness of the Democratic Party wasn't so smart. They are physically impossible to acknowledge that they were wrong.
What you're seeing, from my perspective, what you are seeing right now in the Democratic Party among the Democratic base is the exact same thing that happened with the Tea Party. Back in 2008, it was rioting in the streets, people marching. Oh, well, I'm sorry.
We didn't
riot. Making caricatures with skeletons of the president.
Yeah.
The pictures that were morbid. No.
It was despicable.
And the leaders in Washington, we have now we've got a whole Tea Party movement in Congress who made it their goal for 8 years to stonewall everything that Obama did, and we are now living it on the other side.
Here's
where you've got the equivalent on the other side.
Here's the difference.
Stonewalling. You had Mitch McConnell.
Donald Trump could come up with a cure for cancer, and he wouldn't get a Democratic vote.
He's not proposing anything
I doubt
worthwhile.
Donald
if
Trump
he came
would
up,
ever
if
be
he
able
came up with an infrastructure bill like he promised. Yeah. People
it's
would like
great.
That. Where is it?
It's
and then
coming.
I just saw a tweet with him that he said that he is.
Did he speak about you?
No, not yet. He talked about how he's giving a tax cut to the middle class, and we just had a whole segment about how that's baloney. Like, he's a liar. He talks out of his rear.
But it's true.
But he's truly he is a liar. And he's a documented liar, which I think is even worse than being a liar.
Wait,
he's
the
not
thing.
Even good at being sneaky.
First of all, you have no right to ever call anybody a liar.
He is a liar.
No.
It's in his tweets. And
no,
it's
no,
on television.
No, that's a charge. But this is the vitriol that has to end. We are Americans. We may have differences of view on how to get there. But we both believe in our country, and we have to stand behind this president and this administration and give them a chance. And
his administration is destroying our middle class, our environment, our foreign relations.
It doesn't help to throw names and debate people. And just the way you've spoken here, it puts a rise in me. But I'm going to step back a minute and show some reason. I think if you and I and Mike, if we could all come together and find something that we can support in this particular administration's agenda, I think we could show at least our listening audience that there are Republicans and Democrats who could come together for the best interests of our country.
Trump hasn't proposed any of those things.
I'm
like even like Mitt
I'm
Romney has a tweet here
I'm,
and there
no,
that I agree
I'm not
with.
Asking.
But he's totally.
I'm asking about you. I want to hear from you. What? Because you're a studied woman. You know, you've got the facts. You've got your iPhone, smartphone there. I want to hear from you something that you have heard in this last year out of this administration that you support and that you would get behind as a Democrat. I want to implore you.
I will tell you one thing. I could that Donald Trump called the the Republican proposal on health care cruel.
Yes.
I like that because that's true.
All right.
And he did say, I did like when he tried to ban lobbyists from, if you work on Capitol Hill as a legislator, you can jump out of your seat and go work for Koch Industries. I thought that was a great idea. Of course, he never really pulled through on it. I think he had some executive order, but it wasn't what he said. It was like a decaf version of whatever he promised.
Are you in favor of the elimination of the Obamacare mandate in this new tax plan?
No. It's going to uninsure 13 million people and crash an already very challenging system to deal with.
It'll cause my health care premium costs to go up because I'm on the marketplace proudly.
I will remind you.
All those people are going to go to the ER and increase your hospital
Kathy,
prices.
Kathy, I'm going to answer the question you ask. And it isn't an issue that's been discussed now, but I think it's an issue that Speaker Ryan, who's going to be leaving us soon, basically said that he wants to bring back and be a focus in 2018, and that is criminal justice reform. I think criminal justice reform is an issue that liberals and conservatives and Republicans and Democrats, absolutely. It's got George Soros involved, it's got the Koch brothers involved, it's got the ACLU involved, it's got, you know, the American Conservative Union involved. This is a thing that was moving towards resolution before the campaign started, and then the campaign screwed it all up because everybody had to be partisan for 18 months. Mm-hmm. But that's an issue that I think, looking ahead to 2018,
yeah,
that is an issue that I think,
absolutely,
we can come back to this table, maybe this group, and have a conversation about something where there is some issues that we can all agree on.
I'll say I'm also hopeful with Trump about his statements on DACA, where he said he's hopeful that the Republicans come forth with something, and he's willing to do it.
That's right. And he's going to revisit, give him a few more months to figure it out.
And that would be
thanks to our guests. We are out of time for this evening. Our thanks to Fritz Coleman and Dan Dorfman and Sam Greenberg for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Merry Christmas and good night from Chicago.